Rotary International, a world fellowship of business and professional men with a common ideal of service, presents the Rotary Golden Theater. More than 8,000 Rotary clubs in 89 countries throughout the world are celebrating the 50th anniversary of Rotary International, an organization fostering the ideal of service in personal, business, and community life, and working for the advancement of international understanding, goodwill, and peace through a world fellowship of business and professional men. In observance of its golden anniversary and as a public service, Rotary International brings you the Rotary Golden Theater. As we enter the Rotary Golden Theater, the bright lights blaze forth the title of the drama we are about to see, Dear Enemy. We take our seats and the curtain rises on a comfortable living room, but neither Grant Kelway nor his wife Harriet seems to be sharing the room's comfort. Grant is looking at the evening paper, but obviously isn't reading it.
Grant, do you realize that you didn't say a word at the dinner table this evening?
Didn't I? Sorry.
Wasn't the food all right?
But, oh, fine. It was a nice dinner.
I don't believe you even knew what you were eating.
Harriet, this book.
Hmm? Well, what about it?
The Street of the Swordmakers. Is this the kind of trash young Joey's reading?
What makes you think it's trash?
The title. Can't you be a little more careful about what the boy reads?
Well, that book came from the public library. I'm sure the library isn't encouraging youngsters to read trash.
Why? You sure? Have you read the book?
Well, then you don't know.
It isn't enough that the plant runs haphazardly. I have to face the same kind of situation at home.
Grant, things bad at the plant?
That's an understatement. With all the businesses there are in this world, why, I had to get into the printing business.
But you love your business. You've always been crazy about it.
I did love it, but I certainly don't love my competitors. Of all the price-cutting, underhanded, conniving, scheming, cutthroat operators, they take every prize.
Oh, things will work out. They always have.
But they aren't working out. Nobody in Middle City seems to want good printing anymore. Shoddy workmanship at the lowest possible price? That seems to be the popular thing.
You mean your competitors are really unfair? Well, isn't there some way to regulate such things? Don't you have a local trade association?
Yes, and it's a waste of money. The overall association is fine, but it can't regulate local conditions. Our local association gets together a couple of times a year. We talk about raising the standards of our industry here in Middle City, and then we go home to try to cut each other's throats again.
Well, Grant, if you feel that strongly about it, there must be other men in the printing business in Middle City who feel the same way.
Oh, everybody would be agreeable until the first chance came along to take some business away from one of the others. Then it'd be the same old story.
Grant, what's happened to you? You used to have ideals. You were willing to fight for them.
And I did fight for them. So I saw somebody else get business that belonged to me. After you've taken a certain amount of that, you forget about ideals.
Have things gone any better since you forgot your ideals?
Hmm?
They haven't, of course. And they won't get any better. If the Middle City printing trade needs new rules, why not go out and fight for them?
A new code of fair practices? There's only one thing wrong with that suggestion, Harriet.
I don't see anything wrong with it at all.
Some of my competitors wouldn't let a code of fair practices bother them a bit. A few honest printing firms, like mine, are trying to follow the code and lose whatever business we have left.
You've got to have some faith in other people, Grant. In your business as well as your personal life.
Say, has Frank Lennon been talking to you?
What? What do you mean?
I think you know. Frank Lennon happens to be my biggest competitor.
But, Grant,
He also happens to have a mania and a new code of fair practices for our trade association.
Well, if you and Frank Lennon, two leaders in the industry, would get together and work out a code, wouldn't the others follow?
Harriet, for your information, I don't want to work out any code with Frank Lennon. He's a scheming fox who's outsmarted himself and is looking desperately for somebody to help him out.
Well, from what little I've seen of him, I've always thought he was a very nice person. Even if he is a competitor.
He installed two new book presses about 6 months ago. They're terribly expensive. And they're the kind of presses that do fine printing. Not the cut-price kind of work everybody in the trade has been forced to do recently.
Well, I still don't see what that...
Lennon's in a bad situation. I could have told him that those presses wouldn't ever pay for themselves. Now that he's found out, he wants help. He's trying to twist the whole printing industry to his advantage.
How?
By putting over a new code of fair practices for the trade. He's not concerned about helping the industry. What he wants is some industry restrictions that will let him keep those expensive new presses busy.
Oh, but dear,
what's the matter?
Madge and I were visiting at a bridge party at the country club this afternoon. She told me how concerned her husband was about raising the standards of the printing business.
For selfish reasons.
And she said that her husband told her you were the one printing plant owner who could help him the most in putting his idea across.
He'd like anyone who could help him put those expensive book presses to work. I wouldn't even discuss a code with him.
Well, I'm afraid you'll have to, Grant.
Have to? Why?
Well, Madge and I had a wonderful visit, and I guess we both got pretty much enthused, and, well,
Well, what?
I invited the Lennons to have dinner with us tomorrow night.
You didn't?
I'm afraid I did. The flowers look all right, dear.
Oh, great. Maybe we should send out for some orchids, though, so I can pin one on my esteemed competitor.
Oh, now, Grant, please. The Lennons are going to be guests in our house, and I want everything to be nice.
No, I'll be civil.
I recognize that tone of voice, and you better get rid of it. You'll be more than civil. You'll be hospitable. Oh, dear, here they are. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Mr. Lennon, come right in.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, what a beautiful room. You know, it's ridiculous that we've never gotten together for an evening before, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Grant, I always thought the artistic taste on your printing jobs came from you. I'm beginning to think maybe your wife's responsible.
Oh, well, thank you, but I don't have a thing to do with the business.
I certainly hope you let Grant and me talk about it tonight after dinner. Say, Grant and I have the same interests, you see, and the same headaches.
Well, from the way you talk at home, you have more headaches than interests.
Well, that's true of everybody in the business. Isn't that right, Grant?
I guess so. From the rumors I've heard, you're having more than your share of headaches with those new book presses, though.
Those presses are the greatest investment I ever made.
Oh, that's not the way I heard it.
Dear, can't the shop talk wait? Dinner's about ready.
Oh, I'm just interested in hearing why presses that aren't kept busy are a great investment.
Well, for one reason, Grant, it took those presses to wake me up. To make me realize what a bad rut I was in.
Making money, you mean?
Now, I started out in the printing business as an idealist. Printing was a craft, an art. Every job was a satisfaction.
It's not that way anymore in Middle City.
Exactly, and we're all to blame. Every printer in town seemed to get the idea that the only way to stay in business was to do poorer work for less money. We all cut down on quality and went after volume. We quit training craftsmen. We stopped caring about our ability to do anything except to get the order.
Why, I've heard Grant say the same thing in almost the same words.
I know. Your husband is an idealist at heart, too.
What gives you that idea?
Well, some of your printing jobs, work that shows money isn't your primary concern.
Money has to come first these days. If I'm going to keep the plant busy, I've got to underbid you.
Oh, dear, that sounds almost as if you two are enemies.
We have to be, Mrs. Lennon, in business. Hard-fighting enemies.
But you're wrong about that, Grant. A few of our competitors started doing business that way, and the rest of us fell into line. We don't have to stay there.
Madge, why don't you come out and help me in the kitchen, hmm?
I'd love to, unless you think our husbands need a referee.
Oh, I don't think they'll get that upset. Come on.
Grant, we don't have to be business enemies.
No. Even if we aren't, what about the rest of our competitors? We still have to fight them.
No, we can help them to get back on an honest, fair basis where they can be proud of their trade again.
Oh, your main interest is in helping your competitors?
If our competitors turn out shabby work and lower the standards of our trade, you and I suffer right along with them.
The fact remains, Lennon, you weren't interested in raising the standards of our trade till you got saddled with those two new book presses.
No, I wasn't really interested till I became a member of the Rotary Club about 2 months ago.
What's joining the Rotary Club got to do with the printing trade?
Well, I had only been a Rotarian a couple of weeks when the chairman of the Vocational Service Committee gave the members a real rough talk in his committee report. He said, unless you are carrying back to your craft, your trade association, or your professional group, the ideals, the precepts, and the high standards embodied in Rotary, you should resign. If you aren't inclined to bother about your competitor, are too busy with your own affairs to be concerned with what the other fellow is doing, if you aren't inclined to take on the responsibilities of leadership in your line of business, the membership committee made a mistake when they let you in. Those who fail to properly represent their line of business or profession choke up one of the arteries through which the lifeblood of Rotary flows.
That's quite a speech. But what can a service club like Rotary do to improve business standards?
You'd be surprised. There are Rotarians in every line of business all over the world. All of us are expected to maintain proper standards of business practice and to work for their adoption and observance by others throughout our craft or professional associations.
But you can't raise the standards of our local trade association. You admit that when you come to me for help.
Of course I can't do it alone. You and I can't do it without help. And even with help, we won't be able to do it in any hurry.
What could we do?
Well, first, we'd have to start agitation for better standards of business conduct in the trade.
And suppose we got a fair trade code. Who else would follow it?
Well, we need a good, strong educational campaign, and even that isn't enough. Once we got the bulk of our association members on the right side, we could establish measures to get everyone in the business to observe proper standards.
That's a lot of work. And for what?
For your good and mine. For our personal pride and our pocketbooks. You know what sharp practices in the trade have cost you?
Mm-hmm, plenty.
And they've cost you more than money. A man has a right to be proud of his trade. Unless he is, work isn't any fun.
To be honest, I don't even know that I want a code. I've never liked the idea of outsiders trying to run my business, trying to tell me what I can do and what I can't do.
We have to get some rules to correct dishonest practices in the trade, but no good code is a list of must-not rules. Mostly, we want positive rules to define right conduct and correct business methods.
Some of the cutthroats in our business don't even know what correct business methods are.
Well, they'll find out the meaning of it sooner or later. And once they've found out how much better it is to do business our way, they'll thank us for forcing them into line.
I'm not so, Frank. Oh, sure, I like better business practices in our industry, but we'd just be wasting our time. Oh, hi, Harriet. Dinner ready?
Mm-hmm, all ready.
Oh, Frank, fine. You've got to see the kitchen before we leave. It's wonderful.
Fine.
Oh, is this a new book? The Street of the Sword Makers. What a fascinating title.
Well, it's just a children's book, Madge. Joey brought it home from the library.
It looks like trash to me. That title sounds like blood and thunder stuff.
I'm afraid you're right. Just listen to this. Here in one corner of ancient Damascus, on the Street of the Sword Makers, lived a guild of artificers producing the famous blades of Damascus. And death by strangling, the most shameful punishment of the time, was the sentence passed on any member of the craft found guilty of producing an inferior blade. The sword makers insisted that this punishment was justified because they
felt... Let me see that book. Death by strangling. That's a fine kind of thing for an 11-year-old boy to be reading. The idea of justifying death by strangling.
But how do they justify it, Grant?
The sword makers insisted that this punishment was justified because, in the words of Rashid L. Hammett, leader of the guild, he did place the proof mark of our most honored and trusted craft upon badly smithed and evilly tempered blades, which, having failed in the hand of the purchaser, brought great disrepute upon all the master sword makers of Damascus.
Oh, that is rather lurid, isn't it? I had no idea Joey was reading such rugged literature. Maybe I better make him take the book back without finishing it.
No. He brought great disrepute upon all the master sword makers of Damascus.
What, dear?
Let him read that book.
You see, Grant, in spite of the arguments you've been giving me, you want your son to learn what a serious thing it is to bring discredit to your craft or trade. There were inferior craftsmen, even in the oldest city in the world. But those with ability and honor and pride were able to regulate them.
Oh, I guess deep down inside I'm still an idealist. I wouldn't want Joey to inherit a shabby cut-rate business, naturally.
Then you do think we should start agitation for a new code of fair practices?
I suppose we should have tried long ago. We might as well get started now.
Well, right now, dear, let's eat dinner. It's all ready.
And I'm starved.
So am I. But, Harriet, would you mind lifting the ban on business conversation at the dinner table just this once? Frank and I have a lot to talk about and a lot to do, but don't worry. We'll do it.
And so the curtain falls on the play Dear Enemy, presented by the Rotary Golden Theater as a public service in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Rotary International, a world fellowship of business and professional men with a common ideal of service.